Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Thanks to the pandemic, we've all been inducted into the world of doing everything virtually, even fundraising. So we're opening by introducing the Rowan Center, working hard since 1979, serving and supporting victims of domestic violence. We'll talk about the center's critical mission and how you can help by signing on to build a holiday gingerbread house virtually. Then we'll turn to an epidemiologist with the Connecticut Department of Public Health to hear how the flu stands to complicate our already overburdened healthcare system in this COVID era, and how you can play a role in minimizing that pressure on our healthcare systems by just getting a flu shot. And we'll close inviting you to learn more about educational inequality and what you can do about it in your own community by participating in an upcoming roundtable discussion absolutely free and sponsored by the Southport Collab and Literacy How. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder for daycare and child care providers. Recognizing the devastating impact the pandemic has had on child care, the Women's Business Development Council and partnership with the Connecticut Office of Early Childhood and the Connecticut Governor's Workforce Council is offering emergency relief grants to qualified child care providers in Connecticut. OEC licensed child care providers committed to remaining in business and demonstrating financial need will be eligible to receive grants for between $1,500 and $20,000. The application deadline for emergency relief grants is December 10th, however, or until the program's funds are exhausted. So get on the stick now and learn more about this grant program and receive an application. Just go to ctwbdc.org and look for the Child Care Emergency Grant button. Well, we're going to open up this morning meeting a brand new friend, bringing another member into the For the People family here. I was so pleased to hear from a volunteer from the Rowan Center, a sexual assault resource agency down county, serving Lower Fairfield County since 1979. Like many of our other similar organizations, they provide free 24-hour confidential support to those who've experienced sexual violence or know someone who has. They have a hotline that provides advocates if a victim wants to go to the hospital for an exam or they'd like to file a police report or to help and support them through court proceedings. They can also be with victims as the healing takes place to deliver goal-oriented counseling. They also provide age and developmentally appropriate awareness and prevention education for K-12 students, colleges, corporations, law enforcement agencies, community organizations, and so much more down in Darien, Greenwich, New Canaan, Norwalk, Stamford, Weston, Westport, and Wilton, a big chunk of our listening area here. And Mary Flynn is their executive director. Mary, so great to meet you and bring you on board here and to help you promote the cause. So thank you. As we were talking before we went on line this morning, here we are on October 27th. And wearing our purple to commemorate to stand in solidarity with all of the folks who are victims of intimate partner violence and assault and domestic violence. So great to be talking with you. Doubly great to be talking with you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So we did the quick kind of elevator spiel on the Rowan Center. You have been with the organization either on the board or as its leader for several years. Tell us a few more things that we need to know about the Rowan Center and the work you do, especially today.
Especially today. Well, obviously, intimate partner violence is a big problem in our area. And at the Rowan Center, we deal specifically with those who have been sexually assaulted, which can be through intimate partner relationships, also can be through people they don't know. We deal with anyone over the age of 14, so we deal with kids that are in high school, in colleges, and also people who adults come to us who were victims as children. So we're dealing with a pretty broad array of people who come in, and we provide them with free and confidential counseling services as well as advocacy and it's really quite extraordinary what we can do to help people to heal from some pretty traumatic experiences.
Mm-hmm. You also incorporate a focus on and support for transgender and non-binary folks, and you have
LGBTQ.
Yeah, multilingual.
Yeah, with LGBTQ, we do. We have a very good relationship also with the Triangle Community Center in Norwalk. We do a lot of work with. In marginalized communities, we are available to anyone.
Mm-hmm. And multilingual counseling also available for
folks. Yes, our services, actually, that's a good point. Our services are provided in Spanish and in Haitian Creole. And we have counselors who speak in both of those. So we can, we are there for all the communities.
So is the Rowan Center somewhat a standalone in terms that you recruit and train and maintain all of your services in-house, and they're either subsidized by the communities you serve themselves through those communities' municipal budgets and donations, as well as maybe some grants? Is that how you guys keep everything on?
Right. We are actually a member center of the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence. Mm-hmm. There are 9 member centers in the state of Connecticut, so every town in the state of Connecticut is covered by one of those member centers. You gave our 8 towns in your introduction. Mm-hmm. And through the alliance, we receive a part of our budget through state and federal grants. And we are also very fortunate to be recipients of a number of local grants, some community grants through Stanford and Norwalk, different organizations, the United Ways. And so we are fortunate to be the recipients of grants from a number of different organizations.
That's great. The initiatives that you are tackling over there are probably more dire today, especially with everyone sort of being in captive situations, oftentimes with the individuals who may be most inclined to perpetrate violence against them. This has got to be one of the things that really keeps you and the whole Rowan Center team up at night.
It does, and we tried very hard to get our offices open as soon as possible to be able to bring victims and survivors into the office so they can leave their homes where they, that is the situation. But I will tell you, during coronavirus, we've had to pivot, as other organizations have. We now see clients through Zoom, through, on the phone, through any different way. We meet them in wherever they are. And so our numbers have been dramatically going up, and the numbers of calls to the hotline, the number of hospital calls, quite significantly, especially starting this summer. Yeah. And so we have been very busy.
Yeah, and the curtailment of judicial services probably didn't help much either, right?
Yeah. Well, we work very closely with our 8 local police departments and with the Stanford and Norwalk District Attorney's Office, mm-hmm. and we provide accompaniment for those. We are back at this point, mm-hmm. With the accompaniment in the hospital. We hope that continues and the numbers for COVID stay low. At the beginning, we were not allowed in, so we're hopeful.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to continue to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, in terms of the numbers, I know a lot of agencies like yours that we've dealt with and work with. It's not just about the ones who call the hotline or who have successfully saw their way through their dark days and their judicial and law enforcement chapters and who are now carrying on. You continue to support people call after they have gone through sort of the more formal machinations of processing their cases. Mm-hmm. But also, it really is important to reinforce that your agency touches tens, probably hundreds of thousands every year because of the integration that you have in educational centers.
Exactly. And we do, education and outreach is huge for us. So we educate K-12 in our local public and private schools. And we are also educating really anywhere that anyone asks us to come in. We do programming in local community centers, in churches, in, really anywhere in community, in regional centers, in government centers. We'll go anywhere that people want us to come in. We have been doing a lot of training of parents of students because there are so many issues right now, especially with kids at home, with technology being what it is. The issue of sexting is a huge issue for us. Mm-hmm. And parents, teaching parents about that, teaching parents about the Connecticut laws about consent, are really significant and something that they need to know. We teach college students and upper-level high school students about college preparation, what can happen to them in college and what they need to know.
Yeah.
So it really is an ongoing issue. And with coronavirus, we have also created, through social media and virtual education, a whole new program. So we are offering webinars on consent and healthy relationships and, live Instagram programming on Title IX and changes that are happening with that. So it's been great.
Yeah, and you haven't lost sight of the youngest potential victims or those who need to begin to really see the world that we're living in at an age when they could be most victimized, but do have the potential to protect themselves. And I'm so glad that we're airing our chat here as we open up our program on October 25th, because it gives time for folks to take advantage of your November 5th Rowan Reads program. Tell us about that.
Right. This has been really exciting. We've created a program with Norwalk Library where on the first Thursday of the month, we have a local person read a children's book live on Instagram that really is related to body security issues. And we've had some great programs so far. We've had Senator Bob Duff has read, First mm-hmm. Selectman of Darien Jamie Stevenson has read, and we're really excited about that. So Thursday mornings at 10 o'clock, if you go on to our Instagram, they'd be able to hear the story. And then we do tape it and show it so you can see it afterwards as well.
Oh, great. So the next one is coming up at 10 a.m. on Thursday, November 5th. And then it continues the first Thursday of every month at 11 a.m.
Exactly.
On the Rowan Center Instagram account. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to, maybe if parents are hearing this for the first time and they're still maybe not sure if that's something they want to expose their child to, they can just go on Instagram after the kids go to bed and look at a couple of the previous ones and get the idea that it's a good thing to participate in.
Exactly.
And then just a little over a month later is really a big and really important fundraiser that you guys are having, because you could not do all the programs and do all the support and work that the Rowan Center does without financial underwriting. And that's going to come through Gingerbread Houses and Cocktails for a Cause. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, this is, we've had this for many, many years and love this. This is one of our favorite fundraisers. It's a holiday event that people wait for. And year after year, we have done a live event at one in Darien. Last year, we did one in Westport at one of the clubs in Westport. And it's a wonderful event where you come in and make a gingerbread house. We have a competition. And this year, unfortunately, we cannot do it live. So we have pivoted into a virtual event, which is going to be really fun. We're going to deliver to everybody a gingerbread house, all the candy and icing and aprons and materials that they need to make the house. And then we're going to have everybody up on Zoom working together. And we're looking forward to it. It's a little different, but it's going to be exciting. And it is a major fundraiser for us. So we're excited about it. We have some fantastic sponsors, and we hope everybody will go on and take a look.
Yeah, not just making gingerbread houses virtually on Zoom in front of the all of their crafty peers, but also a chance to get in on some great auction and raffle prizes, huh?
Exactly. And that we're just finalizing now, so that information should be up in the next week or so.
Right.
And, you know, I always say to people, you get to do something really fun. This holiday is going to be different because we're not all out doing the kinds of things we're used to doing. So this will be a really fun start to the season. And at the same time, you get to support a cause that is going to, you know, really mean something during the holiday season.
Yeah, we want to let people know if they want to re-up their memory from their Sunday morning haze about how to get in on the children's reading event on Instagram, or to get involved in this Gingerbread Houses and Cocktails for a Cause event on December 3rd, or learn anything else about all the good that the Rowan Center is doing down in Fairfield County. All you need to do is go to therowancenter.org, R-O-W-A-N center.org. The Rowan Center is making it happen. So Mary Flynn, in the last moment or two that we have with you, I guess the final thing is, if folks can't or are already booked and can't be part of the Gingerbread Houses and Cocktail, they can either make some sort of a donation, or you have a very robust volunteer initiative as well, even though we understand the COVID has a lot of hands off elements to it. Volunteers are still, I'm sure, a backbone of the success in helping do what you do.
Yeah, we do. And we actually train volunteers about four times a year. We have a 40-hour, we call it an advocacy training program. You become a certified sexual assault advocate and staff the hotline, accompany victims to the hospital, and we have quite a number of volunteers right now that are working for us, which has been really extraordinary. And anybody who's interested in that work, also you can sign up right through our website.
Very good. Since 1979, the Rowan Center has been providing free 24-hour confidential support to those who've experienced sexual violence or know someone who has. They've got 24-hour hotline service. They have assistance and support if victims want to go to the hospital, if they want to file a police report. They have a robust system and partnership with the Judicial and Office of Victim Services, law enforcement agencies to help folks through their court and judicial proceedings and be with victims after the fact. They serve Darien, Greenwich, New Canaan, Norwalk, Stamford, Weston, Westport, and Wilton. We hope folks will get to know them and get involved, maybe build a ginger house on Zoom for the holidays. It's all part of the game at the Rowan Center. Please visit them. therowancenter.org. Mary Flynn is their executive director and our newest and latest friend in this really important work going on here in Connecticut. So Mary, great to meet you, and thank you so much for being part of the show. So our friends at the Connecticut Department of Health have been, to say they've been working overtime is so grossly minimizing the work that they've been doing, particularly since the COVID-19 situation has hit Connecticut here. But Connecticut DPH is always busy doing important work. And one of the things that I know a lot of people have been hearing about, and maybe a lot of people are mulling over, is the flu vaccine situation. Many people who said, well, I've never gotten the vaccine before, and I haven't gotten the flu, and when I have, I wrote it out. Well, that's cool. But this year, more than ever, it's critically important for people who may not typically get, or those especially who do not purposefully get the flu vaccine need to consider it. We are with Mark Bolduc. He's an epidemiologist and the vaccine coordinator for the Connecticut Immunization Program at the Connecticut Department of Public Health. Mick, first of all, just give us a little bit of background on you and what your team does in the immunization program.
Sure. So the immunization program provides vaccines free of charge to all children throughout the state of Connecticut up through the age of 18. So that vaccines are, so the cost of vaccines is not a barrier for children to get immunized. So we're trying to make sure that children not only get the vaccines that they need, but they get them in a timely fashion.
There's been a lot going on in another area of Connecticut government in regards to immunizations and vaccines over the past couple of years. And my understanding is that the next legislative session is going to see a comeback of an attempt to try to get all Connecticut public school students vaccinated. Those who opt to not do that have stated their case. From your perspective and from your department's perspective, and not to at all get into the political back and forth, but strictly dealing with data and science, what are the most important things that you need to let young parents and parents who may have kind of been on the fringe or on the sidelines and just kind of relying on luck while avoiding getting vaccinated, particularly for the flu and that range of childhood vaccinations done. What's your best science and advice on this issue now?
Yeah, people have questions about vaccines. There's a lot of vaccines that are given to children, and so parents are bound to have questions. Does my child need to have all these vaccines? And the vaccines that are given and when they're given, there's a schedule to them, and there's a reason why all those vaccines are given, and they're given at a specific time so that children are kept healthy. And so it's important that children receive all those vaccines and they receive them in a timely fashion. And so there is the Academy, American Academy of Pediatrics, and there's the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, and they look at the schedule and they're constantly really trying to make sure that people understand in a clear and transparent way that there is a science behind why all these vaccines are needed. And so parents need to, when they go to the pediatrician, when they go to the family practitioner, if they have questions, if they have concerns, that's the time and the place to ask those questions, because there are a lot of vaccines that are given. And so when they have questions, they need to ask those questions so they can hear the answers from the pediatrician, from the family practitioner.
What are a couple of the biggest fears that you've heard or heard about that based on your training and experience that science and data could assuage, that, things that catch people up in the, kind of in the crowd situation where they're kind of maybe going along, but they don't necessarily have that scientific or data foundation?
Well, I think a lot of parents wonder, why does my child need to have all these vaccines? Is it really necessary that they get all these vaccines and they need to have all the specific series of shots at the specific times? And so they question, when they were children, they didn't have all those vaccines. Well, that's why we have these vaccines now. We don't see these diseases anymore because people are being vaccinated against them. And that's why we don't see cases of polio. That's why we don't see cases of hepatitis B, and we don't see cases of hepatitis A, and we don't see diphtheria and tetanus. We don't see these cases because people are being vaccinated. And if we stop vaccinating, and we've seen that happen, when we stop vaccinating, we see cases of measles. We see outbreaks of measles. We don't need to look far when that happens. We've seen outbreaks happen in the last couple of years in New York State and throughout the country. When we stop vaccinating our children, we have measles outbreaks. And so it is important for children to be vaccinated, for everyone to be vaccinated. And, we can't just look at children. There's a vaccine schedule for adults as well.
And many of us as adults don't think of, well, we need to keep up with our vaccines, but we as adults need to as well, because a lot of us don't even think of, yeah, there are adults out there, there's a schedule and we need to follow it. Many of us don't even think about it. It's not just flu vaccine, but there are vaccines out there for adults, and we need to keep up with that as well.
Yeah. Why don't we just touch upon those really quick, and then we'll really kind of dig in heavily to the flu vaccine and why this year is so much more important for folks who are on the fence about getting it. I know in my case this year, the doctor said not just the flu vaccine, but the shingles vaccine as well. And there are additional vaccines as, I guess, as adults get older and move into their 60s that are added on. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, John, you know, shingles vaccine is very important, and shingles disease is extremely painful for a lot of folks. And so there's a newer shingles vaccine that came on the market a couple of years ago. And so now people 50 and older can get that shingles vaccine. So not only with shingles vaccine out there, you're talking about flu vaccine, you're talking about pneumococcal vaccine for adults. You're also talking about MMR vaccine for adults. In case they don't know what their status is, they should be checking to make sure that they're vaccinated against measles, mumps, and rubella. They should be making sure on their hepatitis B status, their hepatitis A status. All those things that we took for granted as kids, but if you don't know what your status is, if you don't know if you were vaccinated as children against measles, mumps, rubella, against hepatitis A, against hepatitis B, those are things as adults you need to make sure and check on, because a lot of us don't have records from when we were children. Mm. And so if we don't have that documentation, we can't assume that we're immune to those diseases.
Yeah. Also a more relatively new vaccine for teenagers, right?
Right. You know, when we're talking about immunizations, we go from birth all the way through death. So there's vaccines, there's schedules out there, and it's on the CDC website that has, you know, a schedule for children, has a schedule for teenagers, has a schedule for adults, has catch-up vaccination. So it's really through the life term that everyone has a schedule to check on and see where you're at. And if you don't have documentation that you've had those doses, then you really need to make sure that you get those vaccines, because it's really important. And we're in the midst of flu season now, so all the attention is really around flu, but it really goes above and beyond flu vaccine.
Well, hold that thought, and we are going to take a very quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a lot more specifically about the flu vaccine and why it's so important with Mick Bolduc, epidemiologist with the Connecticut Department of Public Health. Stay with us. Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Have you heard about Education Access? It's an e-learning program for Connecticut's Call Before You Dig 811 service. CBYD worked in partnership with Pelican Corp to develop a high-quality e-learning experience that will allow CBYD to offer superior damage prevention training to the state of Connecticut and provide it in a format that's easy to navigate, highly engaging, and information-rich. The new online course modernizes CBYD's traditionally classroom-based excavator education course by providing learners easy access to a self-paced online program. The Excavator Education Course covers a wide range of information, including the CBYD process, excavation planning, best practices, and Connecticut rules and regulations. Online education is the future, and users can access the Excavator Education Course now via a self-registration page at cbyd.com. We're back with Mick Bolduc. He is an epidemiologist and vaccine coordinator with the Connecticut Immunization Program at the Connecticut Department of Public Health. What was odd to me this year, probably because I was paying acute attention to it, was the fact that my provider wanted me to get my flu shot now going back almost a month. And I remember as recently as a year or two ago, we were kind of of playing that, say boo to the flu, start thinking about or getting your flu vaccine around Halloween or between Halloween and Thanksgiving. Is this year unique in that the flu season has arrived early?
Well, I think it's unique when we're talking about the attention that's focused on an upcoming COVID vaccine. And so what we want people to do is, while we have an opportunity, while COVID cases are still relatively low in the state of Connecticut, we have this window of opportunity now for people to go out and get a flu vaccine. And so that's where the message is. Don't wait for the weather to get colder, because people don't think about flu vaccine while the weather's still relatively nice. They wait until the holidays. They wait until the weather gets really colder to get vaccinated. We don't want people to wait. We want people to get the vaccine now, before the weather gets colder, before we may see another spike in COVID cases. And so now is the opportune time for people to get the flu vaccine if they haven't gotten it already. So that's when you started to see this messaging. It may be a little earlier than people are used to, but there really is a concerted effort and a concerted push and a lot of messaging out there for people to go and get a flu vaccine.
Hmm. Does this mean that somebody that got it as early as early mid-September, that for some reason they might actually need some kind of a booster or catch-up shot if the flu season becomes a little more extended than into February and March?
That's a great question, and we get that question all the time. When is the most opportune time for a person to get the flu vaccine? Is August and September too early to get a flu vaccine? It's really never too early to get a flu vaccine, because you never know how long the flu season is going to extend into. But if you got a flu vaccine in September, you should be protected. There's not a need for people to get a booster shot. We don't know how long cases are going to go and last until. Usually we do see cases that go until February, March, and maybe even into April or May. But there's no reason to think that you're going to get a boost. You're going to need a booster shot of flu vaccine. So it's really only a one-time shot for each flu season. There may be some concern that the vaccine wanes over time, but the flu shot that you got in September should last you well in through throughout the course of the entire flu season.
Now, is there something that you and your colleagues and health experts are seeing in terms of the flu strains that are impacting us this season, somewhere else on the globe, that gives us some lead time into understanding how this flu season might play out?
Yeah, another great question. What the World Health Organization does is they take a look at the Southern Hemisphere and they see what kind of flu season they had, because they look and see what was circulating, what kind of flu strains were circulating down there during their recently completed flu season, and they kind of project what we're going to see up here in North America. And so that's what they base the flu strains and the vaccine that we're getting now. So we can kind of project and really see what we expect and hope to see. And that's why, we say, okay, here's the vaccine, and this is what we hope is going to be a good match to the circulating strains. But we won't really know that until another couple months. But we know the best protection that we have against any circulating strains is the vaccine. That's the best tool we have in our toolbox. So the vaccine, no vaccine is 100% effective, but the best tool we have against disease, against the flu disease, is to get vaccinated.
And while it may seem kind of academic, can you just review why getting the shot, the flu vaccine, earlier also is going to play an important role in the larger issue of responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, which, as we are seeing here in Connecticut, looks like is having a little bit of a resurgence. So Connecticut is still one of the safest COVID-19 states in the country, thanks in great part to the work of you and your team at Connecticut DPH. But, how will getting the flu vaccine this year, whether you get it every year or you never got it before, or you haven't gotten it in a while, how is that going to kind of juxtapose against any resurgence of the COVID situation?
Sure. It really is, everyone has to play their part in the effort. And so by getting a flu vaccine, you're keeping yourself healthy. You're trying to keep other people around you healthy who may have high risk conditions. And so if you're keeping yourself healthy, you're keeping yourself out of the hospital, because the flu, as many people may not realize, the flu is just not a common cold. The flu can be a serious disease. It can put you in a hospital. It can kill you. So by getting a flu shot, what you're doing is you're saving vital healthcare resources, you're keeping yourself out of the hospital, and you're keeping those hospital beds available for people who have COVID-19. So it really, you're playing your part in a larger picture here in Connecticut. And right now, as I had mentioned, we're still not seeing a second wave of COVID, but we may see a second wave as winter goes along. And so now is the opportune time for everyone to get their flu shot while we're still relatively calm with COVID cases.
And for those who may have not gotten it before, going above and beyond the call and rolling up your sleeve and getting the shot could mean preventing that same individual from having to take up a hospital bed or the attention and resources of medical professionals who might be dealing with that individual who has contracted the flu, and frees up those resources perhaps for individuals with COVID.
Absolutely. The flu, like I had mentioned, the flu is a serious illness. And so, what you do need to do is you need to play your part in this effort. And the best way to do that is to get vaccinated. And I think what we're seeing so far is that a lot of people are heeding that message. They really are going out and they're trying to get the flu vaccine earlier than ever this year.
Yeah.
Like I said many people wait until it gets cold out, because that's what we associate with the flu.
Sure.
You get sick only when it's cold, but that's not necessarily the case. You can get the flu at any point in time. And so what we want people to do is we want them to get the flu shot now and get protected now before we really start to see flu circulate.
Yeah.
and start to see a large amount of flu circulate in the state of Connecticut. And it takes usually about 10 to 14 days from the time you get the flu shot to the time you get protection. So now is the time for people to go out there and get the flu shot. There's plenty of places where they can go. If there are questions where they can find a flu shot, they can go to vaccinefinder.org. That's vaccinefinder.org. They can punch in their zip code, and they can find, within 10 miles, within 25 miles, within 50 miles of their location. They can find grocery stores. They can find pharmacies that can tell them exactly where they can go to find a flu shot.
Yeah, that's
it's either free of charge or it's low cost. And so it's a pretty easy proposition for them to find a flu shot anywhere in the state of Connecticut.
Great. Well, as we move to the last few minutes that we have with you, Mick, talk a little bit about this relatively new resource that you have in terms of the ability for pharmacists and pharmacies to dispense flu vaccines. This is something relatively new here in Connecticut and across the country, but I imagine creating both the convenience and the resource with an organization that is familiar to the consumer, it really has helped to fortify the greater effort that you're supporting.
Yeah, we're really trying to make it as easy as possible for folks to get a flu shot anywhere that they can. And so pharmacists are allowed to vaccinate. Right now, they're allowed to vaccinate anyone 18 years of age and older, and we are working on lowering the age restriction for that. So we're still working through the language. On the federal level, they had lowered that to 3 years of age and older, and we're still working through the mechanics of the federal language on that. So more information to come on that. But anyone 18 years of age and older in Connecticut can right now go to any pharmacy and get vaccinated for any adult vaccine, not just flu. So if they needed a tetanus vaccine or if they needed an MMR vaccine or any recommended adult vaccine, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, measles vaccine, any vaccine that is on the approved schedule for adults, a pharmacist is licensed to administer that vaccine to them.
Great. And not to be morbid, but I think it is an important reinforcement that we need to make as we close out our conversation with you, Mick. Like with COVID-19, the influenza really has a predominant impact in terms of mortality on older or more health compromised populations. Now, this year, 6 months of age is recommended point at which you're asking people to consider getting flu vaccines. But could you reinforce how dangerous the flu is to younger populations as well? They may not represent the proportional numbers that older folks represent, but there are still a fair number of young people and children in Connecticut who are dying every year from the flu, right?
Absolutely. So when we think about the flu, we do think about the elderly more so than young children. But the two groups that really are most affected by the flu are children under the age of 5 and individuals 65 years of age and older. And so those two groups really are most impacted by flu vaccine. And so when we think about the flu, we say, okay, you know, make sure those two groups first and foremost get the vaccine. And when we look at the national data on a yearly basis, we look at, you know, are those groups getting vaccinated the most? And usually those are the groups that in Connecticut nationwide that do get vaccinated the most, the children under the age of 5 and the individuals 65 years of age and older. As a whole, for the United States, on average, only about 50% of Americans get an annual flu shot. And that's just not good enough. And so what we need to do is we need everyone in the country to be vaccinated because the flu can impact everybody. So I go back to a couple of years ago, John, when we had, unfortunately, we had 3 children in Connecticut, 3 otherwise healthy children with no underlying health conditions who died from flu complications. And people don't realize that this can happen on a yearly basis. And then in the course of the flu season that year, it was a really bad flu season nationwide. And we look back just last year, you know, nationwide, there's on any given year, there's hundreds of children in the country that die needlessly from the flu and flu complications. And most of the time, it's from children who are not vaccinated. So when we're talking about the flu again, we're not just talking about a common cold. We're talking about a serious disease that can put you in the hospital or it can kill you, unfortunately.
Very good.
And that's a hard lesson to learn. Yeah. And so what we want people to understand is that this is, you know, this is a disease that doesn't discriminate. It can kill you whether you're, you know, whether you're very young or whether you're very old or whether you're a teenager or you're middle age. It doesn't discriminate at all. It will kill you because we've seen it year in and year out. And by getting a flu shot, you're helping to prevent, you know, millions of medical visits and hundreds of thousands of hospitalizations and thousands of deaths a year. And so we really need to hammer home that point that people need to get the flu shot. And one of the things that we hear every year is, well, the vaccine is only about 40 or 50% effective. Well, I'm not a math major, but 40 or 50% is better than 0%. It's not worth rolling the dice and taking a chance.
Hmm.
Because again, you're not only protecting yourself, but you're protecting the ones around you, your loved ones. You're not just doing it for yourself. You're protecting those around you who may have high risk health conditions. And it really is the best tool that we have to protect ourselves and protect those in our community. Good. And we can't really emphasize that enough.
Well, we'll leave it at that, Mick. Great, a great way to wrap up the program, and wise information and advice. Mick Bolduc is an epidemiologist and vaccine coordinator for Connecticut's immunization program at the Connecticut Department of Public Health. He's also the program's main liaison for the with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention on all vaccine-related issues, and he oversees the program's vaccine adverse event reporting system. Mick, great to meet you, and thank you so much. Stay safe and healthy, and thank you for all the work at the Connecticut Department of Health. Well, we're wrapping up today on the subject of literacy and reading, and we are going to a old and dear friend of mine. Suzanne Lang is the director of the Southport CoLab, part of the Southport School, where they believe integrating research, practice, and advocacy affects positive outcomes for people with learning and attention issues. Suzanne, great to hear from you. Thanks for calling on us to help you guys promote this important upcoming event you have, this roundtable with all these incredible global and national authorities on Tuesday, November 17th. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but we've got about 8 or 9 minutes to wrap things up here this morning with you. Let folks know a little bit more about the CoLab.
Sure. Thanks, John. I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. The Southport CoLab is an initiative that came through the Southport School, where we're part of the Southport School, which is a school that provides transformative educational experiences for students in kindergarten through eighth grade with language-based learning differences like dyslexia and ADHD. And our vision at the school is a world where people with language-based learning differences and ADHD are embraced for their strengths and potential, and where all teachers have access to training and best educational practices and current research. And we realize that that is a huge goal, that's really big. And so to do that, we started the CoLab. And we had started doing a free community lecture series and started doing some professional development, and then decided we really wanted to take this further to fulfill that vision that we have. Mm-hmm. And so through the CoLab, we do professional development in multiple areas. We have structured literacy, where we focus in on Orton-Gillingham, which is an approach to teaching literacy. We have professional development in executive function, educational and assistive technology. We recently started some sessions on music education. We have preschool professional development and content on our website. We do free reading screenings, and we also do, again, this free community lecture series that the session that we'll be talking about is part of.
Very good. And now I guess it's important at this point to introduce the fact that this is something that is not just being undertaken by the Southport CoLab, but in partnership with Literacy How. Tell us about coming to be acquainted with that organization.
Sure. So I have been really good friends with the founder of Literacy How, Dr. Margie B. Gillis. For a long time, I actually have a son with dyslexia and had reached out to her probably over 10 years ago asking questions about dyslexia. And she wound up giving me her cell phone number. And we have been really good friends ever since. And we've been looking for a way to collaborate. And we've done some collaboration along the way. But we thought that there was an opportunity here through this podcast, that episode that came out recently, to bring this information to a wider audience and really dig deep and find some things that we could do as a community to change what's happening in literacy in the United States.
So you're going to be hosting this virtual roundtable discussion on the topic of inequalities in education across the country, entitled Educational Inequalities, What Can Be Done? It's coming up at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, November 17th. Tell us about this panel that you put together.
Sure. I am humbled to be a part of this panel. It is five amazing women who all bring unique expertise to the table. We have a local, she's a local elementary principal, Colette Fearon. She holds a bachelor's degree in psychology and early childhood education, a master's in remedial reading and language arts, and a six-year diploma in educational leadership. And she is currently the principal of the elementary school at New Beginnings Family Academy in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Okay.
So I'm really interested to hear from her about on the ground what kind of issues she's facing. Then we have Emily Hanford, who is the senior correspondent and producer for AMP Reports, which is the documentary and investigative journalism group at American Public Media. She has spent the majority of her time recently reporting on early reading instruction
We hear her sometimes with Kai Rizdal on his APM show. Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
And then you have Dr. Hoeft. I was going to say you have Dr. Hoeft coming in.
Yes. Dr. Hoeft is a professor of psychology, science, mathematics, psychology, and neuroscience at the University of Connecticut, and of psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco. And she really focuses in on brain imaging, neuroscience, around the research on reading and dyslexia for over 16 years.
Yeah, and then rounding it out with Dr. Washington.
Yes. Who's the professor and chair of the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders in the College of Education and Human Development at Georgia State University in Atlanta, Georgia.
Excellent.
And go ahead.
No, I was going to say in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Suzanne, just let folks know who's your ideal audience? I mean, is this for educators, for parents, or community members, for anybody that wants to know a little bit more about educational inequality?
It is for anyone who's really interested in this topic, the topic of education, literacy, parents, educators, administrators, community members. This, to me, is a critical issue that we're facing that is affects our economy, affects us as a nation, and anybody who's interested in those topics really should attend and hear more.
Very good. Is there is this a free endeavor?
It is. It is free. Registration is required, so we're asking people to register. They can register at thesouthportcollab.org. You'll find there more information about it. We're asking that people listen to the podcast, what the words say prior to attending. If they have time, it's an hour-long podcast, and it is, again, free. And then we're asking that they submit their questions because we'd really like to hear what the podcast, what kind of questions they have after they've listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try to integrate those questions into the session.
Do you think that now that a lot of parents are becoming a lot closer and even integrated as immediate partners in their children's schooling due to distance learning, they are coming to grips with the fact that they may be in one of these situations where their child is being challenged or they're being challenged in terms of what or what isn't a skilled reader?
Definitely. I think we're seeing people, are reaching out a lot more people than typically, who are really concerned about their child's reading level, the lack of what they have gotten over the spring and into the summer because of COVID, and really concerned about what's happening with their children. And I think a lot of people who are living in poverty situations or whose both parents are essential workers are really struggling to be there and turn on the Zoom link or access the materials for their children.
Right. So they can learn about getting on board with this and viewing it or hearing it by going to southportcollab.org?
Yes.
Very good. We appreciate you coming on and and preparing us and inviting us all to be part of this important webcast, Educational Inequalities, What Can Be Done. It's addressing the false assumption about what it takes to be a skilled reader that's created deep inequalities among U.S. children. It's Tuesday, November 17th at 7 p.m. With this distinguished panel, including my guest this morning, Suzanne Lang, who's the director of the Southport CoLab, offering three specialized training programs, structured literacy with Orton Gillingham, executive functioning and assistive technology. Suzanne, great to talk to you again. Best of luck with the program, and we will catch up with you again soon. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.